Good morning and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. And as our custom is always to read the program, the declaration, and any special announcements that may take place. You may pick up one of these anytime as you enter the building, at the table, at the usher's table, and on the main desk. We'll read the declaration first, and then we'll give you some short announcements that will be useful. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles. Through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood, it holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between the associates being that basis, and it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race or creed or sex, condition or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Now, there's a decoration on the inside. It gives you the program, and it mentions that on Sunday mornings, it's usually a talk or discussion that, as you know, began promptly at 11 and will be over at noon. And the doors open at 10:30. Today is Sunday, May 5th. First, in a series of topics concerning psychism and spirituality. Today, the dangers of psychism. During the week, Wednesdays, there is a regular meeting, begins at 7:45. The doors to the building open at 5:30. And of course, the meeting begins at 7:45. And will consist of studies in the ocean of theosophy by William Hugh Judge at this particular time. Lasts for an hour, and everyone is invited to participate, visitors and regular attendees alike. We would like to remind you that there will be a special meeting Wednesday, May 8th at 7:45. recommended that we come in and at least 20 minutes or 30 ahead of time. And there's no conversation or talking for a few minutes before the meeting begins. It puts us in the mood to hear what follows. It's called White Lotus Day, and we will certainly find it very, very helpful in giving us some high points, not only in the life of H.P. Blavatsky, but the Theosophical movement in this country and in the world. Now, 5:30, you can come in and go to the library. It stays open to 7:30. And there's usually a volunteer in there will point out to you the topic for that particular night, plus show you references and other literature that you may find interesting. And in the middle room, before the meeting begins and afterwards, you can check books and pamphlets that you can purchase at a very reasonable price. Psychism and spirituality. The reading this morning comes from a little pamphlet called The Five Messages. This is from the fourth message, and please note the date, 1891, an important date that you will find out about on White Lotus Day. Briefly, it's just a paragraph. Your position as the forerunners of the sixth sub-race of the fifth root race has its own special perils as well as its special advantages. Psychism, with all of its allurements and all its dangers, is necessarily developing among you, and you must beware lest the psychic outruns the monastic and spiritual development. Psychic capacities, held perfectly under control, checked and directed by the monastic principle, are valuable aids in the development. But these capacities, running riot, controlling instead of controlled, using instead of being used, lead the student into the most dangerous delusions and the certainty of moral destruction. Watch therefore carefully this development, inevitable in your race and in evolution period, so that it may finally work for good and not for evil, and receive in advance the sincere and potent blessings of those whose goodwill will never fail you if you do not fail yourselves.
Well, as was mentioned, that was written in 1891, very close to the passing of HPB, and it was written to American theosophists, telling them about and warning them about something that's inevitable, which is the development of psychism in the Americas. So if our topic is, you know, for the month is, what is it, psychism and spirituality. Today, the topic is the dangers of psychism. Okay, so why would psychism be so dangerous to us, you know? If it is, if psychism, and yet it's a part of our development, it's part and parcel to the evolution of the human being, then if it's dangerous, it probably is so because we don't understand it. And if there's, and so it's to be feared if you don't understand it, but if we do what's necessary to gain knowledge of it, then there's nothing to fear and the danger is minimized. So if it's part and parcel of the natural evolution of the human being, why don't we know about this? There was a time when it was common knowledge among those who did what was necessary to learn about their inner nature. But generally, it's not common knowledge in the West today. When was it? Well, to find out, we'd have to go back to ancient times, to the times of the mystery schools, to Plato's Academy in Athens, to Pythagoras's school at Crotonus, where the teachers were also the priests and were also the scientists. And the knowledge that was taught was the synthesis of religion, science, and philosophy. Does that sound familiar to us? Once again, in the 19th century, we have introduced to us this synthesis of science, religion, and philosophy. And when it was introduced, scientists, philosophers, and priests thought it was the most ridiculous thing they've ever heard of. Well, if we or were afraid of it, the more they got to understand it, because it would change too much for them. Well, if we take a look at the three, that might give us an easy inroad. It could grease the skids for understanding what this psychism is all about. And the more we understand it, the less dangerous it is, because we can work with it. You know, we won't allow it, as HPB says, we won't allow it to outrun the monastic development. Will keep it under control. The more we control our psychic, our lower nature, the more we control it, the less it has the opportunity to control itself. So let's look at the theosophical view at this, or the view if we synthesize religion, science, and philosophy. The religionist, doesn't matter which religion of the day, any of the Western religions today, teach very much a materialist based sort of religion, and the knowledge of the metaphysics of the human being, knowledge of the metaphysics of nature, is not taught or is forbidden to be taught, and so there is no real understanding of it. And yet there's, of course, in every human being this inherent intuitive, there's something there. So the answer from the church or from the mosque or from the temple, although they all have their inner teachings, really, we're talking about the 98% of them who don't get the inner teachings. The answer is an answer that claimed to be a revelation from a personal God. Or it is a dogmatic approach, which is to say an approach to understanding this, which is really made up, where the priests are influencing people to believe it anyway if it doesn't make sense to you. But because in most all the dogmas that are taught in religions, because there's some grain of truth, people who are uneducated in these things kind of sense that, so there must be something to it, so I'll just eat what I'm fed. If we remove the dogma from religious ideas, if we remove the idea that Jesus performs miracles, you can never do that. If we remove the idea that no matter what you do, if you do this in the name of Allah, you will spend eternity in paradise. If we remove the idea that if you just believe in Jesus, you'll spend eternity in paradise. Remove all of that and replace it with, it's all about you and your personal responsibility to do the things that are necessary so that when you're no longer in this physical body and you're behind the veil, guess what? No matter what religion you were, however you lived your life in the physical has a direct impact on your experience afterwards. And so to live an ethical life means to live a life according to the law, according to universal law, or call it the natural law, which often is inconsistent with the teachings of Western religions. So get rid of the dogma and recognize the operation of law. So that's one thing we have to look at. Religion is bear this in mind. Well, how do we synthesize that with science? The way that science typically is taught and learned doesn't jive with that necessarily. Why? Because scientists, although, now we're talking about, you know, we're not going to point out any one particular, but generally the materialist approach to science today is just that. The whole universe, if I'm a materialistic scientist, the whole universe is matter, stuff. I can see it, measure it, weigh it, feel it, everything. And the reason, and so the reason why that's the way it's presented today, but it wasn't in ancient times, is because it was the church who gained control during the Dark Ages and abused and forced people to believe these false religious ideas. And the reaction to that in the intellectual community of Europe was to develop science in such a way to completely dismiss the teachings, the influence, the politics of religion, and therefore they stuck with this materialistic approach. But if you just stick with the materialistic approach, the theosophist or the occultist would say to the scientist, you know, any science that does not include every department of nature cannot be a true science. And so the conclusions that scientists draw, although their approach is systematic, although, you know, one thing for sure they contribute to the mindset is, at least on the material side of nature, everything happens under law. Nothing happens according to chance. The issue there is when it comes to the metaphysics of the world, the metaphysics of the human being, the materialist scientist stands proudly and forthrightly claims, I'm agnostic about that. Prove it to me, and I may believe it. But the occultist humbly and reverently claims, I'm not an agnostic, I'm a Gnostic. I have proved it to myself. And you can too if you're willing to do the things necessary within to learn what you need to learn to recognize the truth of science and religion must be synthesize for people to have complete understanding, both from a Platonic perspective, deductive reasoning, and from an Aristotelian perspective, which is what science follows today, from the particulars, drawing conclusions about the general, which is not always wrong. It's a healthy way to think in certain conditions, but to dismiss the idea that reasoning from universals to particulars is a false reasoning, the materialistic scientists stumble there. So for science to admit, to recognize, and to work, to understand the metaphysics of the world or the hidden laws of nature, which we're all invited to investigate because it's the third object of the theosophical movement, that's the challenge. The more they do that, and the more the religions will open their mind up to the law, the more synthetic science and religion is. But then what about this philosophy? What about how does religion, science, and philosophy synthesize? Well, philosophy back in the day was really, it was all departments of learning. It was natural science. It was everything. In fact, in the European universities, There were four degrees offered. You were either a doctor of law, okay, or you were a doctor of medicine. A doctor of philosophy, and we can't think of the fourth one. What's that?
Divinity.
Thank you, theology. Yes, a doctor of theology, a doctor of law, a doctor of medicine, or a doctor of philosophy. And under philosophy was everything else. It was music, was the natural sciences, was history, was grammar, ethics, logic. All of that was which is why today, if a person gets a doctorate in the field of chemistry, he's not a doctor of chemistry. He's a doctor of philosophy, and that dates back to the old universities because that fell under the school of philosophy. Well, the problem with this is, you know, philosophy evolved in such a way under this Aristotelian approach to things that it became, you know, philosophy today is mental acrobats. You know, there are different philosophers who give their opinion on the rules of life, and people study all these philosophers, and how many Westerners actually have developed a philosophy of life that works, that really does work and explains the world to them. And the challenge here is because, or let me rephrase that, the opportunity here is theosophy synthesizing religion, science, and philosophy is really simultaneously synthesizing deductive reasoning, inductive reasoning, and what we're going to call eductive reasoning. Eductive reasoning is the philosophical approach, think of the word education, the philosophical approach to understanding the world around us and seeing that I see the world according to how I think and how I see myself. And if I want to change the world, then I have to be the change that I expect to see in the world. Thank you, Mahatma Gandhi. So this inductive reasoning, in other words, is one way of expressing the Hermetic axiom, as above, so below, as below, so above. If it's true that we are that each human being is a microcosm of the macrocosm, then each human being has in and of himself an entire universe of physical and metaphysical something, which corresponds to everything in the world, which corresponds to everything in the solar system. So philosophy recognizes this, the metaphysical and the physical. Scientifically, theosophy recognizes the law and respects science for recognizing the law. And when science recognizes that the law operates in metaphysical ways, and when religion sees that, guess what? We've been claiming a bunch of superstitious dogma, and let's get in line, forget about the miracles, let's see how the world really works, both visible and invisible, then we're seeing that there's a synthesis going on here because all of it is a party of one all-encompassing philosophy, and that philosophy is theosophy, as given to us by H.P. Blavatsky and Mr. Judge. Okay, so that's why the Western world has no idea why psychism is dangerous, because they don't know about the metaphysical side of what life is all about. Well, let's take a look. Madame Blavatsky, you know, we all have heard about the septenary nature of man and the sevenfold nature of the universe and all the correspondences. But in Isis Unveiled, you know, and that's a way to look at it in from one perspective. From another perspective, she talks about the triune nature of man and the triune nature of the universe. And she says simply that the universe is triune. There is the physical. There is the electromagnetic, which is also has vitalizing properties of the physical. And then there is the spiritual. The physical and the astral change. The spiritual never changes. So too in man, there is the triune nature of man. So without going into all seven, she talks about these three. And the word psychism, gee whiz, you know, in English, if only we had, you know, 100 different words for the word psychism, you know. So in the word psychism, as she's talking about psychism in the introduction to today, really, she's talking about the use of not the physical, not the pure spirit, but everything else in between. So everything else in between needs to be managed spiritually and with a thoughtful, mindful, philosophical approach, knowing that everything that we do is grounded in karma. And so if our mission, if our accepted mission is to do what's necessary in life to be of service to others, to help others see the truth of universal brotherhood, then we have to first see it in ourselves and control ourselves. And that's the challenge. That's the challenge, because if we don't, you see, we're not naturally, at this stage of the game, the human being does not naturally do that. The human being naturally, intellectually, slumps into this personal selfish stuff and is driven by his animal desires. And if he's driven by his animal desires, that's the scenario where psychism will control you rather than you controlling it. Now, she says, and so then this leads into, and so, you know, so many people, they want to, well, let me find out about the inner side of nature and, you know, learn about magic and develop my psychic faculties. That is not what Theosophy is all about. Madame Blavatsky says that it would be better to give dynamite to a child and let him use it as a play toy than to give magic formularies to ignorant, selfish, unprincipled people. Better to give dynamite to the children than to give magic to the unprincipled people. Quite a statement. So at this stage of the game, it could be, in certain ways, up until this stage of the game, up until the Theosophical movement, we're told that it's better that the Western world not know these kinds of things because we weren't morally and ethically ready for it. However, what we have now is available to the public is we've got kindergarten and elementary school here available to the public in the Theosophical teachings. And the fact is, since 1875, those Theosophical teachings have metastasized into so many different areas that Theosophy can be found everywhere. The lessons, the implications, the influence of Theosophy can be found everywhere, from The Wizard of Oz to classical music to New Age writings, self-help. Not too long ago we saw Wayne Dyer on there, and I mean, everything that came out of his mouth, he lifted out of Theosophy, which is fine. Let him put it out. So all these self-help gurus often get into Theosophical ideas. So Theosophy is available in a kindergarten and elementary. No. Magic, the principles. Because the idea is the first steps is what? Is to learn. Religion says live an ethical life, love your neighbor, you know, do unto others as you would. But for those who really want to know why and why do I have to, Theosophy gives the answers, because guess what? Law rules, and karma is the predominant law that rules the human life. And the more you understand it on the metaphysical sides, the more you're going to have a basis, just a practical basis, to live a healthy, loving, brotherly life that has a purpose to serve others. On the other hand, if one were to use the teachings, any teachings, to willfully develop in himself psychic faculties, it's like the baby playing with the dynamite. And the fact is, you in the West, you can't willfully, deliberately, and safely develop your psychic faculties unless you are guided by one who knows how to guide you. And the qualifications for that guide is that he's got to be able to know everything about your inner nature before you even start. He has to know everything about the nature and the history and the qualities of whatever it is the object of your perception. Let's say that you're trying to develop clairvoyant faculties. The guide has to know everything about your character, has to know everything about whatever it is that you might or might not see while you're developing this. He has to be fully developed on every plane of reality or every plane of consciousness that you might develop. He has to already be fully developed there. And he also has to have the power to be able to stop you and turn you off if he sees you getting into trouble. If your guide can't do that, then he's not a guide, and you can't develop psychic faculties safely. On the other hand, when we follow the principles of the philosophy of theosophy, really it's grounded in personal responsibility, in ethics, in brotherhood, in what do I need to do to be of greater service to my community, it leads to what? We talk about a truer realization of the self. What's a truer realization of the self? The realization, philosophically speaking, the word realization means the simultaneous recognition and acceptance of the divinity of the thing to be realized. So a truer realization of the self is the simultaneous recognition and acceptance of the divinity of the self of all. If we're making the effort to understand that, we've got too much work to do to bother trying to develop our psychic faculties. And we could talk about that a little more, but we don't want to go over time. So, you know, I'm sure we've got other contributions. You know, let's fill in some gaps. Anybody have some? Yes?
You mentioned these universal laws of nature. Wouldn't all the difficulties that you spoke of, that the humanities quagmire then, wouldn't they all be surpassed if these universal laws of nature were simply given to us?
Right. Wouldn't these problems that we experience as human beings, wouldn't we get over these problems easier, faster, if we were just told what to do, how to do it, how it all works, so we can work with it? We would think. The thing is, you know, there's the statement in the philosophy where a Mahatma can help someone only to the extent that the individual's karma allows, and if the Mahatma does too much, then it would interfere with the individual's karma, and the Mahatma would never do that. What does that really mean? What does that really mean? Here's the analogy. You know, just to answer, why don't they just tell us everything? Here's the analogy. We know of a little girl, 9 years old, who was dancing all her life. And at the age of 9, she went to a new dance school, because this dance school was really the next step in her development. And when her father brought her to the dance school, now this little girl, she wears the body outfit and the leggings and all, and this little girl prefers to wear a thicker cotton type of legging in dance class because they're always in this big gym area and she gets cold, so she likes to have these cotton leggings on. After the first practice, the teacher went to the father and said, from now on, when your daughter comes to class, I want her to wear either no leggings at all, or if she needs to wear leggings, they need to be sheer nylon leggings that cling to the leg. This is the teacher saying this. Of course, the father was like, well, okay, that's fine, but why is that so important? And it's because the teacher, before the teacher can teach this little girl to go to the next level, he has to know what? He has to know how well her legs are developed, where her strengths are. He has to be able to see her legs while she's dancing and while she's stretching, so he knows what exercises to give her, how far can he push her. Now, if this little 9-year-old girl showed up to class having danced all her life, and there was another 9-year-old girl who showed up to class and she hasn't taken dance lessons before, that teacher would know, there are certain things that I can do with this child that I wouldn't even consider for several months with this child because she hasn't developed. Now, she has all the muscles that she needs and the tendons, but they are not in good enough shape for me to bring her where I really could bring her. So, whereas this one, she's done the work. She's ready to go. She doesn't know how ready she is. But what she's going to learn in this school, starting now, is going to blow her mind. And she is more of a dancer than ever she knew she was when she was dancing with just the little girls. So, using that as an analogy, if the Mahatma were to give too much to those who haven't developed the muscles, they get hurt. So the message is, we're dragging this on. So the message is, don't worry about getting more from somebody else. Take what you got and do the best with it. And who knows what may come next. Yes?
As far as understanding the term psyche, could be interpreted as soul. Are you inferring that they're giving us a sense of duality, psychism? I mean, soul, are there two souls or more than one soul?
Well, yes, you know, that word in so the question is, you know, what with respect to the soul, what is psyche? How do we square that? There's that one word in Greek, psyche, which is, I guess, the source of the word psyche. And Plato talked about the soul, but he talked about different souls. And theosophically speaking, we could use the term spiritual soul, human soul, animal soul. That's been used. What most of us would recognize that to be would be spiritual soul would be Atma and Buddhi, which is spirit and the spiritual vehicle, the highest spiritual vehicle. That would be the spiritual soul. The human soul is mind. And then this psychic nature, the question is, the animal soul is the emotional nature. It's our kamic principle, and it's what drives the will. So really the issue is the powers that are used in psychism are the same powers that are used spiritually, so to speak. The difference between the two is motive. The difference between the two is, am I controlling it for the better of all, or am I letting it influence me for the better of me? If we aspire to be of service to others, we will naturally use it for the better of all. If we are ambitious and want to get more and control more, and then it's really using us and affecting the world around us just like that. Yes?
What we have noticed, and based on what you're saying, the public libraries in the cities are empty most of the time. The books gather dust. The fact that we don't read books anymore, we depend upon what comes to us over the internet, etc. We even go on there for references, what this word means, and so forth. Could you say that would be a clue as to who's in control, a higher or a lower? We don't do any reading of good literature.
So the contribution here. Reminds us of an article we read in Magazine Theosophy, and we think it was dated in 1914. And this article was written along the lines of, you know what? There are way too many printing presses. They are starting to print garbage and distributing it and putting all this garbage books in these libraries, if we put all those books in those libraries, people aren't going to read Shakespeare anymore. They're not going to read the classics. They're not. And it was so interesting because the same applies today to TV and the internet. Average person, 30 hours a week in front of the TV. How would his life be better if he took at least 15 hours of that and read books? Big difference. Why such a difference? Because when we're reading, we are actively engaging our mind. When we're watching TV, we are being engaged, and our mind goes into autopilot. Not even autopilot, it goes into passive mode, and we are influenced by stuff on the TV. We're influenced by, we were a teacher in the city high school, talk to a student individually, and you see who he is. His character. You know what to expect from him. But sometimes put them all in a group and it's like they aren't even individual thinkers. It's like they just follow a group pattern following the group can be very distressful, which leads to the saying to the individual development. So stand out and be ye separate. To be ye separate, we have to maintain active control of ourselves. So with respect to psychism, think of the medium. The medium is passive. She's not in control of herself. She allows influences to take control. And that is the opposite of the adept, who is in control of all his faculties and all the potencies around him. The medium, rare is the medium who is not in some kind of psychological disorder. There was a question in the back.
Yeah, we know that the psychic powers will be developed as we progress along our spiritual path, so to speak. So, and it was just said about being in control, and we're assuming that as we evolve, that control will increase as well. So at our stage now, what is it then that is preventing us from and we think it was said in the beginning of the talk that these powers are inherent in us. So what is it then that is blocking us from the expression of these powers?
So what is it that's blocking us from the expression of these powers? Well, certainly we've done something in the past which has resulted in these powers being dormant within us and us not having access. Now, theosophically, that would logically even be the result of if you abuse it, you're going to lose it. So it's nature's way of being kind and not giving us tools to kill ourselves with until we grow in certain ways where we morally and ethically evolve to a point where we can handle more power. Well, that doesn't mean, now, the mass of humanity will evolve according to, on the one hand, according to natural law, but on the other hand, according to the collective effort that all the human beings put into it, right? But that doesn't mean that each individual can't decide for himself to make the effort if he genuinely has the intent and the motive to be of greater service. Nature will aid him in his evolution. But that's not to say we're talking about the mechanical manipulation of psychic faculties within us, such as in Hatha Yoga or such as sitting. You know, there's this concept of sitting for development where you're passive and you let influences outside of you cause things to develop. And it's a manipulation of psychic powers. What we're psychofaculties. What we're talking about is daily meditation. If a person's not meditating, and then they start to meditate and learn how to meditate, it changes your life. It changes your priorities. It opens your eyes in certain ways. And it can even open the individual's eyes to recognize there's more about me than I ever even realized. So while on the one hand, some people's like, oh, well, what do I need to do to develop my psychic faculties and open up centers in me and do all this? Well, guess what? All the talents and possibilities that you do have at your disposal, are you using all your talents and faculties to the max right now? And are you being of service to the rest of the world with these talents and faculties? Because if you're not, why should you get more? I mean, you already have too much on your plate, so why should you get more? Who among us can say, everything that I possibly can do for humanity, I really am doing right now, so who's to say? Yes?
It's interesting that in 1891, this fourth message was sent to us, and we tried to think of that particular period of time, 1891, even to the present. In France, it was called the beautiful period, the Belle Epoque. Wines and vermouths and all sorts of things were very high on the list. And in this country, the same thing. And we found out that it was not until the 1930s that you could not go out and buy marijuana or opium or anything, but prior to 1930, you could all you want.
Okay.
So, with that and with the advance of certain types of music and so forth, you get a picture. We look back at what she meant. We were being controlled rather than controlling. And it seems that you can't tell me anything I know. And as a consequence, we know what followed prohibition up until now.
Thank you. So this is an example of the psychic outrunning the monastic.
It ran wild.
And it ran wild to the detriment of those who allowed it. Did the lady in the orange have her hand up a little while ago?
I wanted to argue his previous statement that we stopped reading. One of my sons in the high school, he's taking academic English. Most of the kids are incapable to read books. They have to watch a movie in order to write about the books they were supposed to read. But if you go to Barnes & Noble right here, you'll see many people are reading. You'll see many people are there. On the internet, you can download any classic book for free, millions of them, including all of the Shakespeare and Jane Eyre and everything else. And books are a very popular item in today's world. Many people switch to e-reader via computer or electronic devices.
Thank you.
Maybe that's why libraries are empty, but not because people stop reading at all.
We appreciate that, isn't it? So the contribution here is yes, okay. Depends on how you use the tools. The internet can and TVs can be a distraction. Some of it can be a distraction and passive. But gee whiz, if it's used properly, the world has more access to more good stuff than we ever have in history. As a matter of fact, throughout the United States, I'm going to try to get this statistic, 76% now, 76% of all libraries in the United States give their constituents access to ebooks. You can get an ebook right out of your library from your own computer. You don't have to go to the library. And let's say when you borrow it, for 2 weeks you have to return it. it automatically returns itself. And, you know, and there's a whole system set up. They're trying to figure out the business model for that. You know, when the business sells the ebook to the library, what is a fair, reasonable number of times to lend it out, and how much will they? That's all still being worked out. But 70, as we recall, 76% of all libraries have this, and 29% of everything that's checked out of the library is checked out via ebooks. So right, it's all how we use the tools. Yes.
So if humanity is meant to prod along blindly in its development, because we don't know the true laws of nature, and isn't there a chance that as a whole, not as individuals, but as a whole, there's a great chance that we may destroy this planet or destroy ourselves or damage sufficient amount of this world by doing so, because we are prodding blindly. And my question is, are there checks and balances in place, and who are those checks and balances?
Okay, well, that's the issue that we're addressing here. Is humanity trotting blindly? Much of us are, but we don't have to, because if you search, you will find. And so what are the checks and balances? Well, one of the checks and balances that prevent us from killing ourselves, fortunately, is in this physical body, we're only going to be around about 80 years. So there's only so much you can do before. You know, there are other times in history where you're around for centuries. So that is a merciful aspect, one merciful thing. What other checks and balances are there? Well, we used the word occultist earlier. And a theosophist is not necessarily an occultist. A theosophist is an individual, like according to the third object of the theosophical movement, the study of nature and man and the invisible laws behind nature and man, investigation of those laws. So the student of theosophy opens his mind and looks to find out what has been learned in the history of the human race about these things, and it's there to be found. But there's a difference between investigating it and dabbling in it and playing with it. There's a difference between going to physics class and getting a master's degree or PhD in physics and learning about nuclear physics. There's a difference between that and building a nuclear bomb. So what we're talking about is a theosophist who makes the effort to learn these laws will. Well, why should he? Well, because it's the right thing to do if you're trying to learn about yourself. It's the right thing to do if you're trying to be of service to others, because if this psychism is spreading all around, it's in your neighborhood, and when a friend or a relative, and there could be more than one person here, who has been asked by a friend or a relative, you know, we know you do that theosophy, and I heard this, and I got a friend who does that, and you can warn them. And when they open up to you and ask you for that information, could be that you'll blow their mind with how much you know compared to the average person, and you can warn them about it. Now, that's different from an occultist. A theosophist is not necessarily an occultist, but an occultist, one who actually does apply it. He's the metaphysical scientist. He better be a theosophist. He better have impeachable ethics, impeachable morality, impeachable integrity, because if he doesn't, then it's the baby playing with the dynamite, and he's not an occultist. To theosophy, an occultist is one who has done the work, the internal work, who has weeded his own garden before he has moved into that. Yes?
According to the Declaration, we're giving those three fundamental principles. But independent devotion means to think for yourself. And you just thought about coming about the e-books and so forth. We remember years ago, we didn't know there was more than one Bible. Checked it out, there are four or five different Bibles.
We have nine at home, actually.
What
made it possible? Printing presses.
Yeah.
And so forth. So which one do we believe? Whether it's a book from anywhere. So we understand that the Declaration beside us an independent devotion. And the Master teaches us just the principles and so forth, so that we may think for ourselves. And when we begin, I didn't know that.
Thank you. So the contribution here is a student of theosophy is taught to think for himself, question everything rather than blindly, passively accept the dogma offered by the priest, the false conclusions offered by the scientists, the systems, the incomplete systems of thought taught by the modern day philosopher, listen to them, read them, see where they are, and compare them to what you find in theosophy, and see which makes more sense, which is more universal, which does synthesize all departments of learning. Yes?
If I could just follow up. My concern is that for every theosophist, or for every benevolent occultist, there are millions of, lack of a better word, heretics, people
sure.
who don't know.
Uh-huh.
And it is those millions, to me it seems, that are moving the mass of human evolution in the wrong direction.
So
that's my concern.
So there are millions who are not doing the work, who are really ignorant of the work, who do not see the value of the ethics of why you should live your life for others. That's the challenge, and that's the age that we're in. The age we're in is called Kali Yuga. It's the Dark Age. Because of what we're doing and what we're not doing, we are told in the secret doctrine that the evolution of mankind right now is about 1 million years behind schedule. And but, as we said, it's to be expected in this day and age. The benefit of a dark age is that for those who are attracted to these ideas, if we make the effort to learn them and apply them, the karma is much, much, much faster. What goes around comes around, and so the evolution of those who make the effort to serve others will occur much faster during this crazy, seemingly out of control. You know, we have basketball players making 100 times what a teacher should make, right? Okay, so it's part of life. Don't worry about what they're doing. Make the decision for yourself. And the only thing you can really do is live our lives in such a way that we'll be an example to others and make ourselves the better able to help and teach others who are asking. Theosophy is not for everybody. It's for those who seek it. Was there a question here in the front? No? Earlier? Okay, yes.
Earlier it was mentioned the three types of soul. Would it be better to say that there's soul is one, but there's three aspects?
Right. Would it be better to say the soul is one, but there's three aspects? The answer is, on the one hand, the self of all is one, and there are... everything has a sevenfold division. The challenge here is, I mean, if you read theosophical books, a person who's new in the philosophy is going to read. There's a spiritual soul, a human soul, and an animal soul. So for us to sit up here and say, no, there's really only one, and we don't know how to handle that. We don't know how to handle it. It gets too vague. It gets too... We don't know. We're too logical a thinker. Come next week. I don't know. Yes, all is one, but there is different. Let's not kid ourselves. We're not living in a proleia. We are living in the differentiated, manifested universe right now. And when we learn these different aspects of us, we can manage it and use it. Yes, in the back with the gray. Last one.
You mentioned earlier about meditation being important. Extremely important, as well as looking back on your day. I think those two really will give you the right direction in your thinking. It puts a lot of people on the express where most of us are on the local.
Thank you. So the contribution is here is retrospection, the Pythagorean discipline of retrospection, where we look back on our day from effect to cause, not start in the morning and work up, but start right now. And what went on in my day, it helps us see, it helps us relate more clearly the cause and effect and the effect that it has on the human mind. If we do that routinely, as if we make it a part of our meditative time, is that we will find that we are living more in the present, thinking about what the effect will be if we know we're going to have to answer to ourselves tonight. And so that it's a very positive. So with that, we're way over time. And our meeting, just want to remind you, on Wednesday, please come 5 or 10 minutes early. It's White Lotus Day in respect for HPV. Thank you for coming. The meeting is adjourned.
Yeah, whoa.